for March 16th, 2005, and I will open a hearing on SB 5514, the Department of Higher Educational Capital Construction Program. Mr. Pernsteiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, George Pernsteiner, Acting Chancellor of Oregon University System. I'm joined at the table by Bill McGee of the Department of Administrative Services and Bob Simonton, the Director of Capital Construction for OUS. I would first call your attention to the responses from yesterday that we have provided this morning. The first deals with the percentage of faculty who are part-time and whether or not that has changed over the years. We've gone from about 32% or 22% of our faculty being part-time in 93-94 to 32% 10 years later. And we are, of course, concerned about that with regard to student advising and mentoring and scholarly collaboration among faculty. There was a question about six-year graduation rates and when it changed to that. That information is noted here. Interestingly, as we went back to research that, we found out something that pleased us, actually, and that is that the cohort from freshmen from 1987 graduated in 4 years at a 34% rate. The cohort from 1997 graduated in 4 years at a 50.2% rate. So sometimes you're pleasantly surprised by what you find when you go back into your data systems. So I appreciate the question, if only for that, too. On the information on graduate success, we have attached the survey that we give to people. And on the funding scenario of the GRB plus $55 million, Senator Witz had asked what the components of that amount were, and you can see here that about 34% was for enrollment growth, 43% were for benefits-related costs, and 23% for non-compensation-related costs. And we have asked our provosts for the licensing pass rates for those professions for which they know them. So those were the questions that we did yesterday, and we're working on a couple of others that we haven't yet done, but we'll get them to you as quickly as we
can.
Yeah.
Thank you. Chancellor, could you also, in the question one, tell us how that compares to the regional area of Washington State, maybe, and how it compares nationally to the use of part-time?
We will bring that information to the extent we have it, and Susan Weeks would know if we have it. I don't happen to, so that's why.
And a follow-on, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
And how much, you know, how does that save you? In other words, is a part-time part-time employer, does that save you, or a part-time instructor, does that save you 20%, 50%, whatever?
We can try to quantify that.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you. Today's agenda deals with capital construction and deferred maintenance. You'll recall in the opening comments we talked about some of the warning signs that we saw that would be addressed in the governor's recommended budget. And one of those warning signs was a $600 million deferred maintenance backlog. And so a major portion of our presentation today will be to talk about the components of that backlog and the proposals that are before you with regard to beginning to address that. The second thing that we'll do is to begin to talk about some of the new construction projects that we have. We've highlighted a couple of them, one at the University of Oregon and one at Southern Oregon University in collaboration with Rogue Community College. Those projects are intended to help deal with the enrollment growth that we have that has occurred already and the enrollment growth that will be expected in the next 5 to 7 years. As you'll recall, we've increased enrollment by 20,000 students in the last 10 years, and we expect that that number could go up by another 11,000 within the next 7. So with that, I'll turn it over to Bob Simonton, who's our Director of Capital Construction, and who probably has more of a voice than I do this morning.
Thank you, Chancellor. Good morning, Chair Devlin and members of the subcommittee. My name is Bob Simonton. I'm Director of Capital Construction for the Oregon University System. It's my pleasure to come before you today to present the Governor's recommendations for the six-year capital plan. We're also pleased to have 5 representatives from our institutions who will join us later in the presentation. The capital budget asks the state for 3 things: the authority to undertake projects, the authority to spend money, and the authority for the state to borrow money to support some of the projects. The six-year plan was designed to highlight the campus and the system needs through 2011. Our focus today, however, are projects proposed for 2005 through 2007. In developing the $355 million capital construction request, we've established a process to review and evaluate each project to determine how to best utilize limited resources and to and allow for continued success within our academic and auxiliary programs. Although projects were presented that support each of the board's goals, the need of capital repair continues to be an area of great concern and has contributed to the magnitude of our request. Buildings at risk of closure put in jeopardy the labs, the classrooms, and the educational tools that students need to graduate. Today we will start with a brief introduction of our current assets to provide some context to the capital budget request. We will also explore the types of projects and how they're funded. There are six types of funding, and I hope to demonstrate how the campuses and the state each contribute in order to achieve our program objectives. Then we will hear from our campus representatives who will talk about four of our highest ranked projects. The state has made a sizable investment in higher education facilities. We currently have over 20 million gross square feet of building space, and that's equivalent to the size of 40 state capitol buildings, the building we're in now. We're the stewards of over one half of all of the state-owned facilities in Oregon, with a current replacement value of over $3 billion. Within our seven universities, there are over 1,100 buildings and the associated infrastructure like roads, sidewalks, central plants, and underground utility systems. To keep our campuses operational and to serve the growing and changing population of students, capital investments are authorized every 2 years upon the approval of the OUS board, the governor, and the legislature. The magnitude of the current capital needs for the Oregon University system closely correlates with our development history. Following a national pattern, the campuses grew rapidly in response to a wave of new students following the post-World War II baby boom. In Oregon, over half of our space was constructed within a 15-year window from 1960 to 1975. And as a consequence, the campuses are facing problems related to the nature of our growth. While the structures are designed to last 80 or more years, the building subsystems like the heating, the ventilation, the air conditioning, the roofs, and electrical systems only last 30 to 40 years. And unfortunately, the level of funding has not been able to keep up with the amount of capital repairs needed. Our backlog of projects has grown to $600 million, and many of our buildings are at risk of closure due to failure of major components. Another area of concern is seismic. Most of our buildings were built prior to the 1993 building code revision that specifically mandated seismic design standards. We felt that it was important to identify our seismic risks and come up with a plan of corrective actions. So we began partnering with the state's Department of Geological and Mineral Industries, or DGAMI, in 2002 to gather information on the earthquake integrity of our buildings. We've conducted surveys on our larger buildings using a FEMA method, Federal Emergency Management Administration, a method. As a result, we have identified over $400 million of seismic mitigation work that is needed at our campuses. The remaining bullets on this slide address several building performance measures. It should be no surprise that worn-out buildings are not the most energy efficient. If the building components that are on the deferred maintenance list could be replaced, we could lower our energy consumption by over 20%. And growing enrollments cause concern because limited space may increase the students' time required to obtain a degree. Schools have recently offered classes on off-peak times, like early morning, evenings, and weekends, to mitigate the lack of space. So I've noted a few challenges that we face. These problems will take many years to resolve. But the projects proposed in the governor's recommended budget will demonstrate how we will begin to meet these challenges. There are 40 projects seeking your approval and help sort through all these projects. We came up with a system to prioritize the education and general projects. The projects were ranked based on scores achieved in seven criteria. And I will not go into each element, but we'll summarize by saying that there are four basic issues that we are trying to address. The first is access. which relates to projects that add space for enrollment growth or provide continued access to our existing buildings. The second is excellence. These projects create or modify existing buildings to improve the performance of a program. Most of the changes we see in classroom design involves technology. Computers and distance education did not exist when most of our buildings were constructed. And to be used properly, technology requires changes in the facility. The third is reinvestment, and that's simply fix what we already have. And the fourth, target investment for economic growth. And these projects deal with strategic investments to support the Oregon economy through tech transfer and the commercialization of our campus's research. That's the long-term benefit. However, we estimate over 3,200 jobs will be created throughout the state in the short term to support all of the construction activity. So simply put, we can add, modify, fix, or create space that supports our economy. Based on our list of top priorities, the governor has recommended $355 million in projects. The funds come from two sources, state funds or funds provided by the campus. The chart on this slide shows the proportion between the two sources and the funding types that are attributed to each. Although 73% of the budget is the responsibility of the campuses to fund, the state's contribution is critical, especially for deferred maintenance and to provide leverage to attract campus donations. I now want to take a few moments to review the six types of funds that are proposed for the capital budget, starting with the state funds. The state-supported funds include general fund, which is essentially cash from the state. The remaining three types of state funds are related to bonds. And the first type of bond is the Article 11G bond, which references the article in the state constitution that limits the proceeds to only support education and general projects. Now, education and general projects are considered classrooms, labs, libraries, and campus infrastructure. To qualify for these bonds, they must be matched equally with general fund, gift or grant dollars, and the debt service is paid from the state general fund within the operating budget. No appropriations are received for debt service in the biennium in which they're approved. The one-for-one match requirement has been a major hurdle for our deferred maintenance projects. It's very difficult, for example, to find donations for a sewer project. I don't know where you'd put the donor plaque if you could. The second type of bond are the lottery bonds, and these are bonds that are repaid by the state lottery. And they're dedicated to educational or economic growth projects. And then the third type of bond is called SELP, and that stands for State Energy Loan Program. And after years of struggling with ways to fund this deferred maintenance problem, we sat down with representatives from DAS, LFO, and the Department of Energy to figure out this issue. SELP was the solution. This is an existing program with the Oregon Department of Energy, which will allow us to use general obligation bonds to replace certain building subsystems on the deferred maintenance list without the one-for-one matching requirement. Only systems that have an energy payback qualify for this program. A combination of general fund dollars and campus energy savings will be used to repay the debt. The subsystems that do not qualify for this program are eligible to be funded by lottery bonds. In this biennium, the governor's recommended budget also funds the seismic mitigation work with the lottery bonds. In future biennia, a combination of federal grants and dedicated seismic bonds will be required due to the magnitude of the seismic problem. A summary of the projects supported by the state's contribution are shown here. Most of the budget is directed to reinvestment and access. If you look at the handout listing the deferred maintenance projects, you will see that the central plants at each campus receive the top priority for funding. And those projects will use the state energy loan funding model. However, missing from the list is the Oregon State Central Plant, because we were too late to save that building, and we will later we'll discuss that project in a moment. And we will also hear from the campus representatives about the a project in Tier 2 of this list, and also talk about the two new classroom facilities. The second type of funding is the campus-supported funds, which include Article 11F bonds. These bonds are also defined in the state constitution, and they may be issued for projects that are self-liquidating and self-supporting. They're typically used to fund housing, dining, athletics, parking, and student fee-funded projects. And each campus and auxiliary is responsible for their share of the debt service. Next are the gift or other funds. These include various gifts, grants, and typically provide the matching funds for the Article 11G bonds. This slide shows the summary of the auxiliary and student fee projects that are in the budget that are supported by campus funds. Again, our projects focus on reinvestment and access for growth. All the projects are supported by revenues generated from the sponsoring campus auxiliary. I've gone through sort of the big picture view of the capital budget, and before we introduce any of the campus representatives, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Yes, representatives.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we make investments in your deferred maintenance projects, if you defer it too long, your money's been, you know, we should look at replacement. You know, have you made those determinations and looked at that? Because if you defer maintenance too long, it's not worth saving, maybe is what I'm saying.
Yes, Chair Devlin and Representative Wisnett. We've prioritized all of our needs, the $600 million of deferred maintenance. We've added the seismic components to them and ranked them from 1 to however many we go down to. But there are some buildings that are not on this list, and those buildings we've determined that they're not worth fixing. And Oregon State's central plan is one of those.
Does that include the dental school?
I have enough to worry with. Yeah. With seven campuses.
Thank you.
Prior to the discussions here this morning, we've talked briefly about deferred maintenance, and Mr. Bender, to my left here, had in one of his documents published some figures saying that your deferred maintenance of about $83 million. Significant amount of dollars, but that to just keep up with your growing deferred maintenance, it takes about $80 million a biennium. That would tell me that we are not actually making up any ground in the sense of, $3 million of making up ground, but that we are staying constantly with a relatively high amount of deferred maintenance in the system.
Yeah, Chair Devlin, the state typically funds about $11.5 million per year to address deferred maintenance. And the latest study that we concluded, that it takes about $40 million per year to spend in order to keep the backlog from growing any larger.
Yeah. So, okay. One question I'd have, too, on the seismic. You've identified about $400 million. What is the... I would imagine that need would vary by building and by campus and everything else. But are there clear seismic priorities? I mean, are there priorities that jump out? I have a grade school that's no longer being used as a grade school for seismic reasons.
Yeah. I did have a slide that showed sort of the results of the study that we did with Dogami. Oh, there it is. We studied all of our buildings that had occupancies greater than 250. So that translated to about a little over 11 million gross square feet of space, and determined that 29% of our buildings were in the high-risk category. And 50% were moderate risk, and 21% were the low-risk buildings. So we put the seismic work and matched it to the deferred maintenance work so we could do the projects at the same time.
Right.
Because when you go into a building and tear it apart, you want to come back a year later and mess up all the work you've done just to do the other component. It's like paving a road 1 year and coming back the next year and digging it all up to put a new sewer line in or something. We want to avoid that, and it's cheaper to do the work at the same time.
Okay. Any additional questions? Seeing none, I guess we'll proceed.
Okay, thank you. So we'll move on to our examples. The first project we're looking at is Oregon State's new energy plant. And to present that is Jim Lloyd, who is the Associate Vice President of Finance Administration and Director of Facilities at Oregon State University. Jim?
Thanks, Bob. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the OSU Energy Plant project is a replacement project for existing heat plants. A heat plant that was originally built in the 1920s out of brick and mortar and has boilers installed that are about 50 years old. The boilers that are currently operating, we have three of our original five operating, which allows us to heat our campus, both the buildings and the hot water for dormitories and cafeterias, when the outside air temperature is at 27 degrees Fahrenheit or greater. The boiler technology that we have is so old that in some cases when we have to have replacement parts, we have to have those parts custom made. We cannot buy them off the shelf. So as we looked at the original project to replace the heat plant, because we realized that that was the only option we had, was replacement, we looked at a cost of about $43 million to replace that heat plant in place. When we looked at the option of relocating the plant to the perimeter of our campus, we could save $2 million, or the project would become a $41 million project, just as a heat plant replacement. However, we then looked at the option of creating a combined heat and power plant where we generate electricity for the campus and then convert the waste heat to steam to heat the campus. When we looked at doing that, it added $3 million to that same location, and it became a $44 million project, a cogeneration project. And what happens then is we actually were able to slash our utility bills by $2 million a year by generating electricity and using the waste heat to generate steam for our campus. That $2 million then we've used to leverage to become a loan for about $25 million to help finance this project. Okay? The OSU Energy Plant project consists of three components. One is the cogeneration plant. The second is that we have an underground electrical and overhead electrical distribution system on campus that is also very old and needs replaced. In the last 55 months, we've had 60 unplanned outages on our campus, electrical outages, which has resulted in equipment failure, and also, in one case, we lost 20 years of research data. So we have to add $6 million to this project to replace the electrical distribution system on this campus. Now, the location of the cogeneration project on the far west perimeter of our campus has several advantages. One is that it gets the heat plant or the cogeneration plant out of the core of our campus, which is good because we like the core of our campus to contain our academic and research buildings. And it also allows us to add a telephone switch room. Now, our existing telephone switch room on campus is at capacity and will not allow additional expansion on our campus. So by co-locating it with this facility, which will be designed to what's known as a critical need structure, similar to those structures that are built for hospitals, police stations, and fire stations, which will survive a major earthquake, this is an ideal location for a telephone switch room. That project is estimated at $5 million. So when you look at the cogeneration project of 44, the underground and overhead electrical distribution replacement of 6, and the telephone switch room installation of 5, this is a $55 million project. Right now, we're looking at financing this project from several sources. I mentioned the $25 million loan that we get from the $2 million savings on the utility bills per year. I've also have a $6 million reserve in my deferred maintenance budget. We plan to, because of the savings from gas and electricity, market a business energy tax credit for 5. And we're anticipating a $7 million donation on this project. because we believe this to be a showcase project, unlike the sewer system replacements. And as you can see from the slide, this project will be designed to LEED Platinum, a sustainability rating of the highest magnitude. And also, we want this facility to be a teaching facility for the College of Engineering, both in the design, the construction, and the operation of a cogeneration plant. So we think this is a showcase facility. We hope to get a $7 million donation for this project. And when you look at the business energy tax credit and the $7 million donation, we expect a G-bond match of $12 million. So if you add it all up, it comes up to $55 million. Okay. And I'm happy to answer any questions on this project.
Wow.
Yes. Representative Marks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope we could get a written description of that. It's, you've got a very interesting and complex a set of things going on in that, so we'd appreciate that.
Thanks, Representative Marks.
Yes. Senator Walker, then Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, would like to see that. You went through that pretty quickly, and Senator Nelson and I commented, that's high finance, and it certainly is, and I appreciate what you're doing. I just want to compliment you on going outside the box and building a cogen facility. That's really the key to solving Oregon's energy problems in the future. And you are an engineering school. I mean, you have all these things at your disposal, and you should be using that talent, and you have. And I just want to tell you that I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Nelson.
Explain to me the LEED Platinum again. I missed that.
Yes. LEED is an acronym. I believe it stands for Leadership in Engineering Environmental Design or something to that effect. It's a sustainability rating, and it has several levels. There's something called LEED Certified, LEED Bronze, Gold, and then Platinum is at the very highest. Very, very few facilities in the United States are built to LEED Platinum.
So it's a standard, basically.
It's a standard, yes. Okay.
Any additional questions? Hearing none.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Devlin, again for the record, George Pernsteiner. I would add one note to what Mr. Lloyd just said. In addition to being the telephone switch room for Oregon State University, Oregon State is the hub for our entire telephone system for all the campuses, so we have a great interest in their being able to do this properly. So, I'm here to introduce a project that has a personal relationship to me, and I'm going to disclose that right up front, and that's the University of Oregon College of Education building. The University of Oregon College of Education building, the older part of it was built in 1924. And I had the privilege of being both a student and a teacher in that particular wing of the building. And I can assure you that the building that was built in 1924 to serve those who wanted to become teachers then is serving in quite the same way, with quite the same finishes, and quite the same lighting, and quite the same just about everything to the grandchildren of those students of 1924. I can say that because I was one of those students at one time, and one of those teachers at one time, and I do understand that the building hasn't changed a whole big bunch in the whole time I've seen it. The University of Oregon College of Education building is included in your budget by the governor and as a $1 of gift money and $1 of Article 11G bonds. That was to allow the University of Oregon to come forward with its fundraising campaign for this building, and it is actually a $48.1 million facility. It includes about 100,000 square feet of new space, as well as the renovation of much of the existing building and the decommissioning, Representative Wisnan, of about 15,000 square feet of the portion that I have come to know and love. But the it will also allow the College of Education, which now is spread across the campus in many locations and even off campus in some, to bring all of its faculty and all of its students into one facility as well, which I think will help in terms of the academic program. I'm joined today by two people who feel very passionately about this building, Keith Thompson, who's the retired vice president of Intel Oregon, and Ozzie Rose, who is an alum of the College of Education and is well known to you for his advocacy on K-12. And they're going to talk about this building. Both of them, in addition to being passionately devoted to it, are donors to this project, and I welcome them if that would be okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask the Chancellor a question before he departs from the table. And I did not know that, sir, about your service at the College of Education. I appreciate it. But I have two questions I want to ask you. You mentioned the governor's budget. It is in there for one measly dollar. So I'm going to ask you, are there any other projects not in the governor's budget where all of the private match has been raised? Because we're going to hear about how that's been raised.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, yes, there are two other projects for which all of the match has been raised. They were on the board's original list, but at the time that the governor made the recommendations, they had not yet come to fruition. But they are, in fact, the University of Oregon Theater Complex Expansion and Alterations, which is about a $7.9 million project. It has $3.95 million of gifts already raised. The other $3.95 in the original proposal would have been Article 11G bonds. The second one is the final stage of the business complex at U of O, which has been before you many times over the years in one piece or another. The final piece of that is the renovation of Gilbert Hall. The $3.3 million of gifts have now been raised for that project, and so it normally would have been requested to also receive $3.3 million worth of bonds. So those two projects, the U of O Theater Expansion and Alterations, which deals with Millard Hall, one of the oldest buildings we have, and also the renovation of Gilbert Hall for the College of Business, are the two projects that have money raised.
Thank you, and I appreciate that it's the U of O who's raised all of this money.
And they're in the midst of a big capital campaign.
You are, and I'm familiar with every one of those buildings. Let me tell you, I was pregnant my senior year at the U of O in 1978, and I know where all the restrooms are and how long it takes to get from one end of the building to the other, because when you're pregnant, it's a difficult task. And I had a class in that education building that term. It's very difficult because way at the other end of campus. My other question, and it's probably more information than you need to know, but I enjoyed my stay at the U of O. Chancellor, is the College of Education project, was that the highest ranked education and general new construction project ranked by the board?
Senator Devlin, Senator Walker, yes, it was.
I thought so. And my final question is that I really support this project, and I'm disappointed it only got the $1, but at least it's in the budget, and we're going to hear from these two fine gentlemen about how hard you've worked to raise those funds and how much we need to support it. So, thank you.
Senator Whitson has.
Chair Devlin,
George.
Yes.
Just one quick question. You said $48 million and 100,000 square feet.
100,000 new plus renovation of existing.
How much are in it?
I think they're going to. I think it's about 17,000. Or I've got it here someplace. About 18,000 of renovation and 100,000 of new.
That just roughly figures out to about $450 a square foot. I wonder if that that seems, you know, from the standpoint of somebody outside, from the outside looking in, rather high. I wonder if that is, you make that presentation, if you could kind of address why that is so high, or if it's high for that type of building. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitson, we can bring back the information. It is not surprising to me on the West Coast, because I've been involved with higher ed construction for some time in several states. The number did not surprise me. It is on the high end of a range, but it is not beyond what we have seen in other classroom and laboratory buildings. So it's, but it does seem like a lot of money per square foot.
Clarification.
There's parking in there, too. I forgot that. Well, parking, I know, is expensive.
Clarification on in Senator Walker's question, she was referring to the other two projects as having all their match dollars. I'm not clear from the clarification if the education building actually has all of its match dollars in place now.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that the education building fundraising is well underway. They expect to conclude it in about a year's time. They are now at about $11.2 million. They need to get to $24.05 million.
But, Mr. Chair, they can't do that without the state part of it.
Right.
So that was my point.
Yes, part of what we found, if I may, Mr. Chair, to elaborate a bit on what Senator Walker is mentioning, we began using gifts as match for bonds in the 1991 session. That was the first time prior to that general fund had been used. And what we have found in fundraising is that it is a powerful tool to be able to say to prospective donors that, in fact, the state will match them dollar for dollar. And I think that's what Senator Walker is indicating.
Yeah. Well, it's actually sort of a... It's not entirely analogous, but it's sort of deja vu for me for a building at PSU where they were relatively close to the match that it took part of the interim to finally get it in place, is my understanding.
Mr. Chair, I do recall that very, very well, and you are right.
Okay. Please proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the subcommittee. For the record, my name is Keith Thompson. I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of the University of Oregon Foundation. President Frohnmayer wanted to be here today to testify in support of this building, but unfortunately he has to be in Washington, D.C., and he asked me to give a few comments from the perspective of being a donor. Now, I know every 2 years you have a parade of folks appearing before you advocating for projects that will move a number of our education programs into top-tier rankings, such as engineering, research, etc. I've even been one of those individuals. And those are all worthwhile goals, and I hope they can be supported and successful. However, we should never lose sight of programs that have made it into top-tier status, and that they need care and feeding to maintain and improve their position. The University of Oregon's College of Education is just one such program that you should be very proud of and point to as one of Oregon's education's crown jewels. In the U.S. News and World Report, the University of Oregon College of Education is ranked in the top 5 public education programs, in the top 10 of all public and private colleges of education, ranked 3rd for its special education program, and is ranked the most productive education research facility in the nation, attracting over $22 million of outside dollars into the state last fiscal year alone. That is a fantastic set of rankings, and ones that we should be justly proud of, as well as the dedicated faculty and staff that make it happen. However, what we should not be proud of is the collection of facilities that the College of Education lives in the Eugene campus. You've already heard about the 1920s-style high school building. There are several World War II surplus buildings that were supposed to be temporary, and that was over 20 to 30 years ago. They have classes held in over 20 different locations in and around the school. These are basically the same facilities that my wife, Julie, graduated from as a teacher 40 years ago. And these are not the kind of facilities that attract and keep the best and brightest students that then go out and teach in our K-12 system that is the future of our economy and is supported by over half of our state budget. Now, most of you know me from my earlier testimony as chairman of the OHSU board, from my work on the Quality Education Commission, and my background at Intel that I am passionate for Oregon to have a quality education system. It is for those reasons, along with the quality of the U of O program, that my wife Julie and I have made a major personal commitment to the $600 million campaign of over $2 million. The bulk of that donation is dedicated to the College of Education for the building and scholarships. Our College of Education students and faculty need and deserve an up-to-the-date, technically competitive facility to prepare the teachers upon which our education system depends to prepare Oregon citizens for the future. Oregon is blessed to have a strong public and private partnership that raises more than 50% of the dollars necessary to build capital projects from private sources so that the state receives more than it invests. A great return, envied by any investor, and one that I hope supports making sure that the College of Education building project is in the next budget. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for your support.
Yeah, I do.
Senator Watts.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson, for sharing that information from U.S. News and World Report. I think that's really great, and people need to know how important this university is to our community, and as all the universities are, but this College of Education, if I remember right, at some point in time, that program was decommissioned. I think it was probably in the early 80s. And do you recall that?
I recall at some point in time. I don't recall the exact dates. I was not involved in it at the time.
What is amazing to me is that the program was decommissioned in a time of budget crisis, and it's come back and become this excellent program. And, for instance, David Conley is one of the U of O professors in the College of Education, and he has established the first of its kind program called Standards for Success, and that is a program that's accepted all across the country. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard of it. I'm not that familiar
with
it.
Yeah, well, it's just an example of what this fine college can do, and I appreciate that you and your wife have made a commitment to this College of Education and trying to get this project moving. Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Oh, I did. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, yes, thank you for your presentation and also for your personal commitment to quality education in Oregon. I'm struck by an interesting sort of phenomenon here, however, Mr. Chair. Would probably have in the education program then at the University of Oregon one of the premier colleges in the nation from where you describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is apparent from the description of the old building's facilities that the facility is not what makes a premier program. Because the facility as we're describing it, and as the good senator from Eugene describes it, is somewhat antiquated. But it's still a program that's in the top five in the nation. In terms of the quality of the program, what happens with this $48 million project? Do we go to the top five in the solar system?
It would be easy to draw a correlation that if you keep them in poor facilities that they can overcome that and be a premier organization. I don't believe that's the case. I think they have a fabulous dedicated staff and faculty that has overcome the facilities and has put together a program that is premier. By giving them new and better facilities, I think they can even improve upon that as well as attract the best in the nation to participate in their program.
I can follow, Mr. Chair. And thank you, and I do appreciate very much that answer. And I'm not making an argument or trying to make an argument, before the senator from Eugene throws any more arrows at me. in opposition to this, but I go back to a position that I've taken for a long time that, and it really is, was documented in the 1950s, I think, by the Coleman studies that indicated that it wasn't the facility that made for, in that case, in their studies, a good K-12 education. It was something other than the facilities that they found in some pretty dilapidated there were quality K-12 programs and in some very nice new facilities there were some pretty poor
and your point that it's the dedication of the faculty and probably the dedication of the university to this, and the dedication of folks like yourself to provide some of the support for it. But I would remind us, colleagues, that it is not necessarily facilities that make for the quality. The people who make for the quality are the professional staff, the professors and administration that go in to those facilities as such. And so we need, you know, we don't want to lose sight of that and think we're creating a mecca for quality education just because we put in a nice new facility. It continues to need that superb faculty and superb administration that goes with it. Thank you for indulging my editorializing.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. I'd like to note former Senator Ken Meserly has joined us in the audience, and he looks a lot more relaxed than we are. So.
And Mr. Chair, yeah. If I could just comment to Representative Jensen, and I appreciate the comments. I think what the University of Oregon has done, they are able to attract good faculty despite their dilapidated facilities in certain departments. And, you know, for instance, Professor Conley's program Standards for Success is going to be a leading concept in this nation because the governor's just got back about how they need to raise graduation requirements and do all these things. And his program says instead of asking what students should learn in high school, it looks at what they are expected to know when they enter college. It's sort of what we're doing here instead of with the new way of budgeting and looking at programs and how they perform. And the University of Oregon has done a great job with that, but you can't ask people to continue to work in substandard facilities. And I think the fact that the university has raised nearly half of their $24 million says a lot about the commitment to people in that community and around the state who care about the College of Education. But we can get into that in phase two in our priorities. And I just wanted to throw that on the record. And there are no arrows coming your way, Representative. Just good vibes. Thank you.
Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you have another question?
If we're,
oh, yes. Yes.
Chair Devlin, if we're editorializing here, I'm still a little hung up on the $450 a square foot. You know, assuming this room is 50 by 50, it would cost $1,125,000 to build this room. That just seems awfully steep, and I'm certainly not a construction engineer, but it just.
Yeah. Well, we can look into that. Mr. Rose. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose. I reside at 1323 Jordan Drive South in Salem, and I'm here to ask you to support the capital construction bonds for the College Education Building at U of O. I am a graduate of U of O and have spent most of my professional career in Oregon. I am a donor on the project, and I am co-chair of the effort to raise dollars from the school administrators community for this project. You have heard much over the past several days about the quality of the college and its contribution to our community and our state. We have a highly regarded, productive college education, and you've heard a lot about that. Notwithstanding the high quality of the staff and what's going on, they work in facilities that are awful. The two main buildings were old when I was a student there in the late 1960s. They're both over 80 years old at the present time. The computer lab that they have to work with is a 30 by 30 classroom with some PCs set on tables. All their classrooms were designed to put students in desks facing the front of the room and listening to a teacher talk. And the kinds of ways, what we know about the brain and how people learn, tells you that that isn't the only way, isn't even the best way to learn. And you can't model good teaching and provide training for people on how learning takes place unless you have facilities that accommodate different ways that people learn. The graduate assistants not all of them, but some of them, their offices are desks in the halls of the buildings that people walk around those desks as they go from classroom to classroom. As I noted, I am one of those who had the door of opportunity opened by the College of Education. I was a teacher from out of state and came here in the late 1960s and got a PhD at the University of Oregon. I spent the rest of my life in a public facility near the University of Oregon, 50, 60 miles to it. I have a daughter, my wife and I have a daughter that got a math degree from the University of Oregon. We have a daughter who got a physical therapy degree. We have a son who got a political science degree. I have a son-in-law who got a degree in languages, a daughter-in-law who got a degree in journalism. And I have my last son, or our last son, is a junior there in human physiology at the present time. Many doors have opportunity been opened for me and my family by the University of Oregon. It is time for us to create a facility that will open those doors for the next generation, the next 100 years. If things go like in the past, the building we're building, whether it costs $400 or $300 a square foot, is a 100-year investment. And it's time that we made that investment for our children and their grandchildren. We need your support for this effort in the fundraising side. As I indicated, I'm involved in the fundraising side. It is a lot easier to approach people and talk about, if you will do this much, the state's going to match that amount. And I encourage you to give us that tool. I have no doubt that we can raise the balance of the $24 million that we have to raise. And I thank you for this opportunity and hope that you will favorably treat this issue. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Rhodes?
You're too kind.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, again, George Pernsteiner, thank you for indulging us in that presentation. To Senator Witz's question on the cost per square foot, I've done some quick calculations, and if I had remembered the $5 million for parking in the first place, we might not have had the confusion. The gross square footage cost per square foot is about $360, and we can bring back the details of that get soon. What we'd like to do now is to focus on one of the older buildings of the state system, one of the buildings that has been in use the longest, both as a grade school and then later as part of Portland State University, and that's Shattuck Hall. Shattuck Hall was built right around 1910, and it has not been upgraded significantly in all this time. At various times over the last few years, we've discussed with you minor fixes to Shattuck Hall, but this time we want to bring forward, through President Bernstein, a discussion of the whole building and of what the proposed budget would allow in terms of preserving and using that building well into the 21st century as a major classroom asset. So President Bernstein is available to you.
Good morning. Chair Devlin, members of the committee, I'm Dan Bernstein, the president of Portland State University, and I'm here today to talk about the university's top deferred maintenance project, the restoration of Shattuck Hall. This project is important to the university's ability to continue to meet the increasing needs of our student enrollment. The building contributes to the cultural and architectural qualities of the university, and the renovation is needed for the health and safety of our students, faculty, staff, and visitors to our campus. I'm distributing pictures of the building and some of the maintenance challenges that we faced. As Acting Chancellor Pernsteiner pointed out, Shattuck Hall was constructed over 90 years ago, and the university acquired it in 1969. I know Representative Wisnett, you asked the question about whether it's better to tear down a building than to restore it. At approximately $13.7 million, we'd be able to restore 93,000 square feet of space in Shattuck Hall at a cost of approximately $149 $1,000 per square foot. And there are really two reasons why you should support this restoration. First of all, the cost of duplicating what we have in Shattuck Hall would be approximately $24 million. And secondly, and maybe most importantly from a personal perspective, you would save me the unenviable task of seeing people like Harold Schnitzer, a prominent business leader and philanthropist, and State Senator Jackie Wenders to inform them that we're tearing down their elementary school. Shattuck Hall consists of three floors and a two-story annex attached to the east end by way of an underground tunnel. And the annex was the school's, the elementary school's gymnasium. Shattuck Hall is a very beautiful building, but it really is in serious need of repairs and restorations. Without updating the infrastructure, the building is really at risk of closure. And additionally, the age of the building presents the possibility that there will be complete failures of some of the major systems in that building. Currently, the baseline energy use is almost twice as high as other buildings on campus. And that makes this building inconsistent with our commitment to be a sustainable campus because of the high operating costs. Renovation provides us with an opportunity to improve energy savings through new systems. For example, the HVAC system in the building is outdated, and the heating and ventilation is done by two constant volume multi-zone systems located on the first floor, and there's no air conditioning in the building. These systems have steam heating coils. The building has no emergency generator power backup, and in the summer months we often have to close classrooms because the temperatures get between 80 and 100 degrees in the summer. There's limited access for students with disabilities, and the building has one very old and very slow elevator. The building only has one men's and one women's restroom. These are located on the first floor, and the access for physically challenged students and other users of the building is difficult at best. There are also safety concerns associated with Shattuck Hall. The building is a non-reinforced clay masonry structure and needs to be upgraded to meet seismic standards. Additionally, the building has asbestos floor tile and asbestos wrap on all ductwork. The fire alarm and suppression systems are antiquated and unreliable. Furthermore, the building is long past its expected life. The building's roof is long past its life expectancy. At Portland State, we'll use the deferred maintenance funds to connect the building to the central cooling system in Kramer Hall. We'll renovate and replace the HVAC systems. We'll abate all asbestos. We'll construct ADA accessible restrooms and other floors. We'll provide necessary seismic upgrades to the building. We'll tear off and replace the existing roof, reclaim space for classrooms to meet the university's growing enrollment needs. We'll replace all existing doors, the cracked and broken masonry and the concrete. We'll replace the existing fire alarm and suppression systems with updated and more efficient systems. So we ask for your support for this project, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Senator Whitson.
Just one quick question, Mr. President. Could you restate the cost per square foot to retrofit?
About 140.
This is to retrofit and to remodel it.
Yes. Chair Devlin, Senator Whitson, that's the total cost of replacing the HVAC systems, the complete renovation, about $149 per square foot.
Yes. Representative Marks and Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to hear that the restoration costs are less than a new construction in this building. I mean, Portland has a very strong historic preservation bent, and I think having been in there in the summer, I'm looking forward to it being usable.
Chair Devlin, Representative March, I think the fact that the temperatures get so high in the summer and actually we have to close down parts of the building just creates problems of inefficiency for all of us. Thank you.
Just for your information, Mr. President, I can remember correctly some of my earliest years there not selecting classes in the spring because they were in that building.
Change your whole major.
Chair Devlin, I also have to admit there are certain buildings I don't visit in the summertime.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I suppose it remains for historians to tell us whether it was a tragedy that you didn't. because, and even that, we don't know how many great things you might have gone on to if you had been able to get courage. And just as a little inside joke, though, and you'll appreciate that this is just between Dr. Bernstein and Representative Jensen, my condolences for the unfortunate events of a week ago, and we'll look forward to next year with that.
Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen, looks like Senator Nelson is the only one who's smiling today.
I want to know the inside.
Well, you know.
Thank you, though.
Another aside to this, although they were more than about 20 years apart, I can remember being in some of the other buildings in classes 20 years apart, and I think the same desks were there from 20 years earlier.
Were you still there? Still carved in them?
Yeah.
And the gum you left underneath.
Mr. Chair, I would note that some of those desks continue, and I saw a few weeks ago to say Vanport Extension Center on them.
Wow. Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Good morning, Dr. Bernstein. Morning. It's always a pleasure to see you. I plan to talk with Senator Winters this afternoon, and so I'll pass along your implied pledge and admonition to us to save Shattuck School. As an aside, and somewhat on a different subject, but because you are here, I noted earlier testimony when we were looking at enrollment of Oregon students by Oregon County and institution at time of entry. According to the fall 2004 headcount, Portland State University is drawing students from every county and leads all the other institutions in the number of students coming from other counties. At some point, not today, but I'd like to get some reflections on the record about how you're able to do this. What is the draw? And just help us unpack the numbers and what's behind them. For example, PSU, the current total is 18,908 from all counties. U of O is 14,187. OSU is 15,197. And then there are some other numbers. But it's an interesting piece of information that I'd like to have more information about.
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, I would be happy to provide that information to you. I think in some ways the short answer is that more and more students are finding it attractive to get a quality education in a urban environment. And so the fact that we're located downtown Portland has been a major draw for us.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next project which we'd like to showcase is a collaborative effort between Rogue Community College and Southern Oregon University. President Elizabeth Zinser is joining me here this morning to talk a little bit about the New Medford Center, which Rogue and Southern are proposing.
Thank you, Chancellor Pernsteiner, Senator Devlin, members of the committee. We're really very pleased to be here and participate in this hearing. And it's very exciting for me to be able to tell you what a thrill it is in our Southern Oregon University and Rogue Community College area that we have been able to come together with a degree of collaboration that has happened in recent years with your support. And I'm going to give a little background about that and then focus on the facility itself. But the timing for the opportunity to develop post-secondary education to a whole new level in Southern Oregon University is very, very good in many ways. The city, the Medford-Jackson County Chamber, the Southern Oregon Regional Development Inc., the Rogue City Council of Governments, of city governments, and a whole series of organizations have come together to support this enterprise. The basic purpose, and I believe you have a two-page document before you, and I'm just going to highlight some of the key points. The central purpose of this is really twofold. One, it is to enhance the partnership between Rogue Community College and Southern Oregon University in order to create even more seamless transitions in post-secondary education, growing our enrollments, and expediting the progress of our students to graduation. The second is to provide an environment for a center for closer alliances among the various organizations, business, government, education, in workforce development. I want to point out in particular, as all of us are doing on our projects, how much this is aligned with our board's priorities and the priorities of Governor Kulongoski, focused on affordability and access, student progress to degree, quality of education, and the engagement of students in economic development and the role of the institutions in promoting economic development and civic engagement. So under the category of results, we are focused on how we can develop the performance measures to demonstrate over time the impact that this facility and our growing collaboration will have. And so it is focused on access, affordability, enrollment growth, and greater participation in college. It is focused on enhancing quality through the spaces, but also through the interaction of the faculties of the two institutions. Greater efficiencies are being gained through this project. Just one indicator of that is that 16,500 square feet of this facility plan will be available to each of the institutions, therefore doubling that amount, than could possibly have occurred without having shared spaces. I've commented on the partnership, so I won't say another word about that, other than to say that we're looking at greater integration across K-12, community college and university missions, having just had some recent meetings with the ESD in our area, the three-county area, to look at how all of this ties in with the aspirations of the K-12 system, and also greater integration with business and governments for internships, for research projects, and for innovative activities. And needless to say, higher wage-earning jobs in the long run as a result of this facility, and certainly during the construction process in construction jobs. A word about the history and the background. It was in 1996 that the white paper agreement was developed between the two institutions that led to the collaboration that occurred once Rogue Community College moved into the Rogue Valley from into the Medford area, expanding its service area significantly. And it was between 1997 and 2003 that we had regional partnership funding thanks to the legislature, and that was approximately $4 million over a three-biennial process. Now we are looking at this joint facility. And one of the most important problems that this is addressing, really the largest problem this is addressing for Southern Oregon University, is that our enrollments in Medford have grown to nearly 1,000 students at any given point in time, unduplicated for credit-granting activity. There's also about 250 students being served in non-credit activity. And these students are being educated in seven different locations all around Medford. in a 6 to 7 mile radius. So it's very difficult for the students to move around these various facilities. One of them is a facility that I've provided a picture for you. It's the one that our foundation owns, the Mary Phipps Building, and it is not ADA compliant, does not have the appropriate infrastructure, and is not located in Medford in the Education and Cultural District that is really designed in the strategic plan of Medford for the educational developments. That is the only one that, as I said, we own. The other facilities we are teaching in are in the mall, the Rogue Valley Mall, the Job Council, and in three schools. So not only are faculty having some challenges getting in and out of these various facilities to do their teaching, but students are moving about in a very wide range. I would like to emphasize that over time, up to this point, the accomplishments of the partnership between Rogue Community College and Southern Oregon University have led to a point where 60% of RCC students are taking classes in the Medford area. For Southern Oregon University, about 20% are taking at least one class in Medford, and many of them taking the vast majority of their work in Medford, and that is growing rather rapidly, and bringing them together in one facility will allow that to grow, because that is the principal barrier. Our articulation programs have expanded over time to the point where we have about 250 transfers at any given point in time into Southern Oregon University, and our dual enrollment has grown to about 150 students, and that's expanding rapidly. Again, I mentioned that we had almost 1,000 students at any given point in time, and I have outlined here for you the degree programs that we offer at the baccalaureate degree, the minors that we offer there, and the two master's programs, the latter being in management and in education. Further, we are developing joint degree programs. A simple example of that, and I won't give you others because it'll take a little too much time, but the most recent is a development in early childhood education where the student receives the AA degree from Rogue Community College, can go into certain levels of practice in early childhood, and then can move on into Southern either directly or after a little time out and then coming back. And the programs are so tightly developed that the student progresses very easily toward their baccalaureate degree and prepares themselves for higher level and more responsible positions in early childhood education. I outlined here also on your handout just a few examples of the shared services we already have in place. Shared library services with books and materials moving back and forth, becoming increasingly electronic in their access. Certainly the library, the new Medford Library, is in this educational district, and so the public library as well as the libraries of RCC and the Library of Southern Oregon University are very tightly connected in sharing services. We share advising services. We share financial aid services. In fact, at this point in time, a student may be an RCC student taking classes at SOU, and their financial aid covers them at SOU, and vice versa. That was not possible until fairly recently, but we're continuously designing ways in which students are served well and in an integrated fashion, regardless of which institution they're engaged in at that particular time. The building itself is, you have a little background on this, and we've also put up a couple of posters, if you can get a glance at it. One of those posters shows the educational and cultural district in Medford, and the location there of Rogue Community College's leased spaces now, the library, and some of the park-like spaces there along Riverside and along where the freeway is. And there's four sites that have been identified as possibilities for this building. There are two that are the preferred sites, the Oak Street Marketplace, for example. If you're interested in knowing more about that, I can point it out. But I just wanted you at least to have a little visual of that site. In your handout as well, not very legible, of course, in the black and white, is a little conceptual design. It's not exactly the footprint, but the concept of this building is a third of the space for RCC's expansion, a third for SOU to consolidate across its seven different locations now into one and be able to grow, and then a third of the space will be shared for shared services for students, shared spaces for classrooms, and for a variety of functions systems, but what we find most exciting is the one-stop shop concept that is embedded in that centerpiece, that shared space, where we would have business partners, schools, government, nonprofits, and health agencies working with us more closely. And folks are very excited about this. It is probably going to lead to our moving a great deal of what we're doing in our business school in from Ashland into the Medford area. Our small business center would become much more active in this center, where we each have separate centers now. They would begin to work more closely together and meld. And the schools, the school district, and our work with K-12 and the seamlessness from K-12 through community college through university, that will be a framework within which we can continue to plan with those aspirations. And I could mention others, but I think that perhaps will give you the notion. The financing of this facility is through the governor's budget is outlined for $5.75 million of the $23.3 million facility from 11G bonds for RCC to be matched probably largely or entirely by the bond proceeds from the local property tax measure 17.3 that was passed this summer and early fall. For Southern Oregon University, our share of that 23.3 is $5.9 million for 11G bonds to be matched with 5.4 in general funds, and then our anticipated sale of the Mary Phipps building, which we estimate will bring about $500,000. Obviously not a great deal. What I'd like to share with you now is that we recognize as all of us recognize how challenging it is to come forward with the general fund component of that match at this time of slow but encouraging recovery. We at Southern Oregon University, in partnership with RCC, are making efforts to secure alternative sources of funding, concurrent sources of funding. One of them is our hope, through the help of our congressional delegation, to receive funding for the equipment component of this facility. And so we have put forward $3 million request through our congressional delegation, and both the leaders and their staff are very, very excited about that and willing to assist us in it. The other point is that the MURA, the Medford Urban Renewal Agency, has indicated, and I've copied a letter for you here on the handout, their intent to provide support for this facility. The exact dollars that they could apply to this are not known at this time. They're estimated because it depends upon the site that is ultimately selected, and that process of site selection is underway right now. We believe it'll be somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.8 million. So if we can even get $1 million from federal support for equipment and $1.8 through MURA, that begins to move us forward significantly, but it does not address the whole of the need. Finally, I would just emphasize again how well aligned this project is with the developments of our area, with the governor's budget and his desire to see this kind of collaboration evolve over the state, over the entire state, looking at this as a very good example. And certainly in our Medford and Jackson and Josephine County area, we have widespread support from local government, from business, and from the K-12 system for this effort. Finally, the Oregon Business Plan. We couldn't help but note, in fact, part of our thinking on all of this was related to the emerging goals and priorities of the Oregon Business Plan. So I've tried to outline here for you what we believe to be the key elements of the Oregon Business Plan that will be addressed very specifically and well, I believe, in our region by this project. I'd be very pleased to respond to any questions you may have about any aspect of this project.
Thank you, President Zinsser. It's good to see you again this morning, and I certainly appreciate the time that we were able to spend when you visited my office. Questions or comments for President Zinsser? Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And thank you for your testimony. I'm really struck by this partnership thing. And basically, your testimony today coming from the larger universities and the urban universities with their issues, and then your issues and how you're resolving them. And that's how you, what you're doing in Southern Oregon, we're actually doing Eastern Oregon, too. Yeah. I mean, we're not doing it actually with buildings but mm-hmm. at this mm-hmm. point, but at some point I can see that that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But it's a question, I guess, of a new way of delivering services. And I guess maybe this is a softball pitch, but how do you see, is this actually happening, that you're figuring out a new way to deliver services? How effective is it going to be? What do you see the future of all that?
Thank you. Chair Gordley and Senator Nelson, thank you for that question. Indeed, we are devoted to not only enhancing the quality and efficiency of delivery by examining and developing new methods, but we also are interested in being a kind of beacon for new ways of doing business in post-secondary education. The fact that we are sharing some of the services to students in the way we are is not necessarily completely unique, but it certainly is out on the cutting edge. The work, for example, between our financial aid offices and the way we deliver financial aid services and counseling and funding to students of the two institutions in a way in which it's seamless for them is simply one example. So we believe that this facility will provide a home and a center for those kinds of shared services to evolve over time, for sharing classrooms, for the real potential of having joint faculty appointments where it makes a lot of sense, especially at the lower division level, to enhance the quality, both because a community college often has expertise that a senior university may not have and vice versa, and that we begin to look at how we maximize and leverage the strengths of our faculties in co-teaching and in joint programs. So we're excited about the wide open territory here of demonstrating for our own sake, that is our students, but also for the wave of the future within Oregon and nationally for rethinking how we deliver post-secondary education.
Well, we're talking about performance majors here. I mean, how are you going to be able to quantify that fact when it's pretty much leading edge?
Mm-hmm. Right.
How are we going to have a level of satisfaction that this thing is really going to work?
Right. Senator Nelson, that's very, very important, and we are looking at performance measures as our institutional research people at the two institutions are beginning to talk to each other about this very point, because we're very mindful that our accountability back to the students and to the public as to our ability to enhance quality of education, the flow through for students to graduation, the increased participation, all of these aims that are tried to outline at the top, which are not yet translated into performance measures per se, but they're the outline of the performance measures we envision. And to the extent that we can bring those institutional research measures and processes together, I think we'll be able to do some institutional research that will allow us to answer those questions.
Just to kind of seem like that's one of the weaknesses we have with performance measures. I mean, we're trying to do provide services in a new and different way, and we may not be able to really quantify how that's coming on. But just, I mean, your gut reaction would be that, hey, this is a good thing.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, as we discussed a little bit yesterday, we are evolving those performance measures now. And one of the reasons that I noted yesterday that we would see increased numbers of degrees even under both the governor's recommended budget and any higher level than that, but certainly under the governor's recommended budget, was because we were able to do a lot better job of connecting with the community colleges through the Oregon Transfer Modules, through the degree audit system, and the other things that are sort of embedded in the way that we intend to do business from now on. What Southern is doing with Rogue is serving one of the larger cities in the state that does not now really have higher education center. The partnership that they have is longstanding. They have a variety of articulation and dual enrollment agreements. As you heard, they do financial aid together. That's not unique. We have that with Oregon State and Lynn Benton. We have that with Portland State and virtually all of the community colleges in the metropolitan area. We are trying to do that throughout the state in order to provide students with a better path, a quicker path to a degree. And this Medford Center will, in fact, help students because they now can get all of their classes in one place, not have to drive around to seven or eight locations as they do now if they're trying to do both community college and university at the same time. It will also allow us then to have a home for the strategy of providing better access in Southern Oregon, because that's one of the areas right now where we're not meeting the same standards of access that we appear to be in the Willamette Valley. I mentioned that on like day one or something. One of the warning signs is that the participation in college and the college graduation rates in areas outside the Willamette Valley are lower. Mm-hmm. And this is part of our strategy in Southern Oregon, at least, to begin to address that.
Senator Whitson.
Chair Devlin, President Zinser, how will you, just a technical question on the business aspect of it, how will you assign the ownership of that building, the maintenance of the building, and the operation cost of the building?
Chair Devlin, Senator Whitsitt, that's a wonderful question because our committee of RCC and SOU individuals that are working on that very point are including some key people in the business and the city government area. Our work with MURA, for example, the Medford Urban Renewal Agency, very much at the table in these considerations. And our intent would be for us to have shared ownership, shared responsibility for the operation, design it in such a way that it's roughly proportional to the spaces that for which we are responsible. But what is so heartening about those discussions is that there's a considerable amount of trust, in fact, a very high level of trust, and a willingness to design ways of accomplishing those aims of ownership and of operations collectively without being too preoccupied with the fine structure. If you understand, if you can understand what I'm saying here, is that it is truly a partnership. We're joined at the hip, and whatever institution or agency is in the best position to handle various aspects of the operations, that's the way it will be designed. We do have some sensitivity, especially to the visibility of our institutions in this context. Southern is, as I said, we're teaching 1,000 students for credit courses, and most people in Medford don't know we're doing that, unless they happen to be direct recipients, because we're all over and there's no real identity for us. So there is in the conversation some concern about being sure that Southern Oregon University's presence and contributions in Medford becomes more readily available.
Yes. Chair Devlin, Senator Whitson, just as a follow-up, we have a precedent for these kinds of shared ownership with Portland Community College and Capital Center up in Beaverton, and we've had that arrangement with them since 1996, and it's worked pretty well. So you basically hammer out those agreements in advance of the building opening, mm-hmm. and we've, as I say, we've done it up there for, I guess, 9 years now.
Okay. One follow-up?
Yes.
Is there any legal problem in funding from two different sources? One is an Oregon University source, and one is a community college source. I mean, how do you meld that together?
I'll begin that, but I would appreciate if the Chancellor would comment on that as well, as it's a legal question. Senator Whitsitt, our belief is that we can define, and that process is underway right now, the responsibilities for the third of the space that we would be responsible for financing and operating, be accountable for that from a legal perspective as well. RCC would do the same, and then we'd have shared responsibility for that portion of the facility that is shared, and design the legal agreements that allow us to be able to do that in an effective and defensible fashion.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, again, I'll look at the Capital Center as an example because it is one where we've done it, and we did issue debt for that. We do own a major portion of the building, and that ownership is vested in the State Board of Higher Education, whereas another portion of the building, the ownership is vested in Portland Community College, and then there's a shared, it's almost like a condominium arrangement for the sharing of certain things like mm-hmm. the building systems and the roof and the parking and so forth. Those things are set out in the documents of ownership so that you can tell who owns what and what the responsibilities are. And we had to do that very clearly
because on that particular facility, we did issue Article 11F1 bonds, and we had to be able to show that they were self-liquidating and self-supporting bonds for that facility. So it was done very carefully and very clearly in the articles that the Attorney General wrote for us back in that period. And we would use that as a model because it worked pretty well for us for the last 9 years.
Thank you.
I have a rather difficult question in a sense. You mentioned Urban Renewal Agency, which I assume is part of the city of Medford. Or
yes.
Is the project actually within an urban renewal district?
Senator Devlin, yes, it is. It's the city's vision for the 21st century plan has specified this area as the educational and cultural district. And Mura owns some of the land and some of the buildings in this area, not all of them.
Have you had any discussions about their potential participation in perhaps some of the costs of the facilities in terms of public improvements that would be necessary for this type of a facility?
Senator Devlin, yes, indeed. They are committed to providing a significant portion of some funding going in. We're thinking it may be around $1.8 million at a minimum going into it. The question you're asking about ongoing updating and maintenance is, again, one that is a part of the discussion with them about our ongoing operation and responsibility for the facility.
I just wanted to be assured, if you were in the Urban Renewal District, that there was some participation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would see a facility like this as being something that might lead to further development in the area, actually.
True. Very much so. Thank you for that.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Again, George Pernsteiner, and I'll be joined by Bob Simonton for wrap-up and any further questions. But I want to, before I start, I'd like you to take a look out the window. And you see there a tree in bloom. And that means we dodged a bullet. What Mr. Lloyd from Oregon State didn't say, I will now say, and that is that if the temperature had dropped below 27 degrees, in fact, various buildings at Oregon State would gradually have been shut down. We had a very mild winter. Oregon State could keep its buildings open. Part of this capital construction budget request is to allow Oregon State to build a new facility that you've heard about in order to make sure that it has the ability to heat its campus. And they're doing it in a very creative way in partnership with a variety of people, including their own energy providers who stand to lose money out of the deal but still want to participate because it's the right thing to do for them. That's important. And it's the single most important project we put forward to you. But I would note that Tier 1 deferred maintenance, if you look at that list, on every other campus in the system, we are taking steps in Tier 1 deferred maintenance to make sure we don't get in that same situation on any of the other campuses. We are trying to deal now with the central heating facility at every one of the campuses, and that is what shows up in Tier 1. Our budget for the last now 6 days has talked to you about access, affordability, excellence, and economic development. Those are the four themes of the State Board of Higher Education. They're the four themes around which we have organized our budget, and they are the themes which actually pervade this discussion as well. Access deals with two dimensions here. One is access for students to buildings that work for them and that won't fall down while they're there. It is, to me, a very difficult thing to sit here and talk with you about deferred maintenance in the abstract when we have a chain link fence surrounding the education building at Oregon State University
so that passersby aren't hurt by the falling of the masonry. It is a scary thing to me to talk to you about the Oregon State heating plant. It is a difficult thing for me to talk with you about Shattuck Hall or any of the other buildings that show up on the deferred maintenance list, because what they mean is that for the last several years we have failed in our responsibility as fiduciaries for the universities to make sure that those problems did not exist. What we're asking you is that we take the steps in this biennium to begin to address the deferred maintenance problem in a very serious and direct way. This will be the first time in the all of the years that we've been talking about deferred maintenance that we actually are talking about a number in the budget that will at least keep us even when we get into the next budget, as Senator Devlin so eloquently said earlier. There's $84 million in this budget to deal with deferred maintenance projects. That's important. That will keep us about even. And that will be the first time that we've been able to even say that. But we know that's not enough, and we know that over time we need to bring to you a plan that will, in fact, ensure that our buildings are open, they are able to be used, and that they are good learning, teaching, and research environments for the work that all the various people who've spoken with you over the last 5 or 6 days have talked about. That's a very important access issue. We have 80,000 students today. Most of our buildings were built at a time when we had about 50 to 60,000 students. We have not added sufficient facilities to meet the kinds of standards that we had for instruction in those days of the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, or even the early 90s. We've grown rapidly. We've added 20,000 students in the last 10 years. We have not added very many buildings. So before you today also is new construction request, new construction in Medford, new construction in Eugene, but it's to address the needs that we have because we've already added 20,000 students and we're going to add another 11,000 over the next 7 years if we're going to meet the demand of Oregon high school graduates for the same kind of and participation in quality higher education that we offer right now to students. So we're requesting you not only to fix what we have, which is by far the board's highest priority, but also to provide for the enrollment growth that we anticipate in the future and that in some cases has already occurred today. And so there are some new construction projects as well. Most of the projects in this capital construction budget are funded with other funds. They're not funded with state monies. Most of the state monies that are focused in this budget are focused on dealing with preserving the assets we already have, in making sure that we don't have the failure of the physical plant systems at the other campuses that unfortunately we are about to have at Oregon State if we don't move to correct that. We are trying to deal with that. That is what most of the money in the budget, from SELP loans, from lottery bonds, from 11G bonds, is all about. There's also some real direct general fund in there, about $12 million of which you have provided to us every biennium since 1991, because you've used that to match Article 11G bonds to help us deal with as much of the capital repair and deferred maintenance problem as we could deal with within that amount of money. And we ask your continuation of that amount as we go forward. But we're asking, in addition, that you do something different. That you do something that says, we know those facilities need improvement, we know we need to preserve them, we're asking you to take a look at the energy savings and capitalizing on those in order to issue the SELP bonds. We're asking you also for support with lottery bonds to begin to deal with some of the seismic issues that in fact are as Bob Simonson indicated, can mount to a huge amount. We have looked very carefully at every building in our system, all 1,100 of them, and we have brought to you the highest priorities for deferred maintenance and capital repair, and we're hopeful that you will see the necessity of dealing with it in this biennium at this time in the funding mechanism which has been developed jointly with the Energy Department, with DAS, and with LFO as the best way we can go forward to address these very critical needs. We also are asking you to take a very careful look at these new construction projects.
We talked about it briefly the other day in terms of generating construction jobs. I think Bob mentioned that. Yes, that's true. They will generate about 3,200 construction jobs for the life of these projects that are in here. That's important. It's important for economic development. It's important at this time for the state's economy. But the more important thing is not that. The more important thing is we are building and preserving the assets that will allow us to offer quality education to our students for the next 20 to 40 years, as we have been able to do in the past. That's the concern, the major concern we're trying to address. This does address, though, the board's key priorities. By preserving and expanding the facilities that we have, we deal with access. Being able to deal with excellence is something that I think Mr. Thompson and Dr. Rose talked about a little bit with regard to the University of Oregon. You have to have the facilities in which to conduct the learning and the research, facilities that are commensurate with the abilities of our students and our faculty so that they can best learn and best create the knowledge and the understanding that will move us forward in a 21st century global information-based economy. That's what excellence is about for us with regard to facilities. We have to provide the right facilities in the right place at the right time for the people who want to learn and the people who want to create knowledge. And, of course, the economic development aspect is immediate with 3,200 jobs related to these projects. A lot of these projects do not involve state money. They involve things that relate from renovating a residence hall to providing dining facilities to providing, and now I'm spacing a minute. We have student unions. We have recreation centers. We have a variety of other projects that are before you that don't require a penny of state money. These are projects that are supported by the fees that are generated by the projects themselves. We're asking for your approval of those also, because what we're doing here is creating an entire system within each campus that will allow them to have learning communities. In many cases, students live on the campuses. In many cases, students eat on the campuses. In most cases, students park on the campuses. Those projects, too, need to be included in this budget, even though there is no state money involved with any of them. But in many of those cases, we are issuing state bonds, but those bonds will be paid by the fees that are generated by those projects or by the student building fee, which is a statutory fee that you established many years ago. I guess what I'm asking is, please help us with this deferred maintenance problem. Please help us with this access problem. I look forward to any questions you may have. And if I don't have the answers, Bob has more detail than anybody else I've ever met.
Any questions from the Chancellor? Senator Nelson.
Yeah, I have a guy. Thank you very much for that, Chancellor. I think this committee understands that we need to have more money in the system. Taxpayers basically said we can't do that. Senator Gorley has a plan. Can we get that done? I mean, I think if you're asking us for that plea, we need to ask you that you need to do a reevaluation of educating of the folks that are within your control also. I mean, the people in my part of the country sometimes look at higher education and say, you know, what are those guys teaching them down there? They're teaching them that the landowner out there is raping the land. Well, we're not doing that. I mean, that's a huge part of our economy. There's a lot of criticism on the higher education department because they're saying, well, you're teaching those kids to do things and think about things that aren't really our core values. And what we have to get down to, I think, in this whole thing is how do we actually come up with more money to help fund these public services? And it's really broadened the base of the economy. But what Oregon has done is basically constricted the base of our economy in several ways. Land use laws and Measure 37 is an absolute outgrowth of that. I mean, that's an education. That's the public. They had to send a pretty strong message that they didn't like the way the Oregon land use laws were going because it's too constrictive. And so I think that the university system also has an obligation, too, to come in and say, okay, how do we get to a practical solution so we can create more funding for some of these public services? And to me, that's the sole question that we should be addressing. I mean, I'm sure most of this committee would just love to say, here's an extra $100 million or something to go down. How are we going to find that money?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, that's a much broader question than I might be prepared to answer. But I will say this.
when I first came before this body in the late 80s with capital construction budgets, those budgets talked a lot about state general fund as a way in which to build buildings in higher education. And that was the way it was, that had been for a very long time. Lottery was added, I think, in about 1985 for buildings. In the 1990s, that got turned on its head. And yet we've been able, without huge infusions of state money, to continue to bring you new buildings and, in certain cases, renovations of buildings, largely because we've been able to come up with creative funding solutions that have allowed us to move forward. I think you heard a couple of those today with the University of Oregon project, which is funded half from private donations. That didn't used to be the case. You heard from the president of Southern about the joint project with Rogue Community College, which in fact uses the sale of land, it uses local property tax by the district in order to help leverage. If you look at even the deferred maintenance projects which we brought forward, many of those are through mechanisms which we did not use years ago. We have tried over the years to come up with a variety of ways to provide facilities. The chair knows from the building he mentioned a while ago that we were scrambling around looking for match for a whole biennium. There were 10 different funding sources in that building, only one of which was the state. And that's what we have tried to do. But what I'm suggesting now is, especially with regard to deferred maintenance, we have kind of run out of options. When Mr. Simonton talked about not being able to put a plaque on the sewer, that's very real. Nobody's going to be able to raise a lot of money for those kinds of things. We don't have, we have many creative ideas. We've used a lot of them over the last 15 years. And now we're asking you to help us with the ones we have before you.
Senator Whitson.
To Chair Devlin, Chancellor, just to follow up on what Senator Nelson was trying to address, I think a week ago I spent some time in Lakeview talking with seniors there who say, you know, we're just dying here. We don't have enough. We don't have enough funds to put for our programs. Last night, Gail and I had dinner with some judges, and they're working 4,000 cases a year apiece. Working 290 days a year. They need money, the seniors need money, and you need money, and the fact is that we have a flat revenue stream, and I think what Senator Nelson was trying to get across and what I preached to anybody that will stand still long enough to listen to it is that we have to develop our revenue stream, and that's to put people back to work, and that's to get back to what Oregon used to do well in the past. And there certainly is a sense in my area that that is not being taught in university systems, that we are not being taught, that our kids are not being taught that the wise use of natural resources and our water and our timber is appropriate. And that's what made Oregon great, and that's what will make Oregon great again. And I think in order to service our needs, we have to create a bigger revenue stream, and that is by putting our people back to work. Thank you.
Yes. Chancellor, every time that Oregon has invested in infrastructure, it's paid dividends, whether it's been in higher education, transportation, or many of the other areas, even if I talk back in the 60s, paying dividends in terms of water systems and sewer systems in the state, in terms of the growth of the state's economy. One thing that people seldom seem to talk about is that deferred maintenance is actually a form of debt. In fact, it is the worst form of debt because you're not even paying on it, and it grows like as if you had an interest. If you had a loan and you just simply let the interest accrue on it, and you never paid on the principal and you never paid on the interest. It is a very real form of debt, if you could comment.
Senator Devlin, it absolutely is. And let me go back a little ways. In 1991, when the legislature first asked us to quantify what we thought our deferred maintenance was, the number stood at $160 million. Today, it's at $600 million. So over that 14-year period, we have essentially accumulated debt against our facilities of about $440 million. The asset value of those facilities is about $3.4 billion. So you can tell that it's almost as if we have a mortgage we're not paying on that now is worth a sixth of the value of the whole building. If that continues, I think Representative Wisnant had a very good point. At some point, some of those buildings become unusable. And when they become unusable, it becomes a direct access problem. If we are using them now for instruction or research, which is what these buildings that we're talking about today are used to do, that's a problem. I think Bob Simonton has already mentioned to you that we've identified some buildings now that we will not be that aren't worth fixing. We are at some point going to have to address what do we do with the functions that we've been performing in those buildings. Part of what the College of Education proposal does is to deal with that. But we have others just like that spread across the system. It is a debt because it means that we are eating away the asset that we have created. And at some point, that asset can no longer be used in the way in which it has to be used to achieve the purpose of educating students. And that's a concern. When I talk about closing buildings because it gets too cold, that's another deferred maintenance problem. But what it really is it's saying to those students, you don't get a chance to learn. It's saying to those researchers, as Mr. Lloyd indicated, you've just lost 20 years of your research because the power went out. Those are some of the things that are very real in addition to the deterioration of the asset. The deterioration of the asset has impact on what it is we do and all the things we said we were trying to achieve over the last several days of educating students and conducting research.
Senator Portland.
Well, I want to go back to my good friend and colleague, Senator Nelson's question and challenge. And I appreciate you continuing to bring the question and the challenge forth in these hearings, because we're not going to move forward as a state until we answer the question and fully deal with the challenge that you are putting forth. And I'm going to just add to the question and challenge, as you know I'm prone to do, and say to the Chancellor, we have a tax code developed in the 20th century that is inadequate in its method of collecting and distributing revenue. We have inadequate revenue to meet the growing needs of the state, some of the needs that you heard Senator Whitsitt list. I chair the Public Safety Committee, and I can tell you we're looking at a $24 million hole in the Judicial Department budget. Our courts are part of the foundation of our democracy. Are you, Chancellor, are you willing to lend your leadership to an effort that talks to Oregonians about the deficiencies that currently exist in the 20th century tax code, as well as talk to Oregonians about the issue and the challenges that Senator Nelson has put forth. That is a conversation that needs to be bridged, if you will, a conversation that needs to be led, if you will, by some additional voices other than the voices here in the legislature. We need help convincing Oregonians that we need to be putting forth 21st century investments in everything if we're going to thrive as a state, and we're not there, and we need help. That's what I'm asking.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, when the governor put out his budget in December, one of the things that he talked about was that this budget as proposed was not adequate, but it's what we could afford. And I think that starts a conversation. Where that conversation goes, I don't know. But I do know that the needs which have been brought before you by us, by everybody who preceded us, and by everybody in all of those other committees are very real. And it is not inappropriate to begin a conversation about how to align those needs with revenues. But I don't pretend to know when that time is or how that approach would be or what the governor really would mean as he said what he did when he announced his budget.
Yes. Just one further. I mean, you brought forth a fact, I think, that I hear recurrent through almost every committee, is that in the early 1990s, somehow Oregon has lost the ability to truly fund. I mean, we've been kind of on a downhill thing since the early 1990s. And some people have said it's ballot measure 5 was the reason for that, if you're talking about K through 12. But maybe that's not so true of higher education. But it also coincides with the decline in the use of our federal force. And to me, you know, and I appreciate the things that the university are doing. I mean, Dean Hal Selwasher is working with me to try and work up some plans. He has a plan out there. Mm-hmm. There are 12 states in the United States that have a surplus. Is there anybody in the university system that would undertake the challenge and say, why do those 12 states have a surplus? What can Oregon do to duplicate them and then educate people and say, okay, we can get to that point. We can actually have those funds out there to help and support these public services. So that's just a thought that was going through my head as you were speaking, sir.
Well,
thank you.
Can I add something else to the mix?
Yes.
Would you be willing to get behind a sales tax dedicated to education, pre-K through higher ed?
Senator Gordley, it would depend upon what capacity was before this committee, as a private citizen or as the chancellor.
Leadership is what is required.
Well, thank you all for your presentation. Thank you, Chancellor. And it's been a very good week and a half or 2 weeks, and we will see you in phase 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the members of the committee.
Yep. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Hmm?